Welcome everybody on this wonderful Saturday. This is Marcia McMahon, your show host for The Peaceful Planet. And we have the most wonderful guest today. We have Richard Salva, who has written a book on reincarnation titled Soul Journey from Lincoln to Lindbergh. And we're going to be discussing that book and the fascinating details that he reveals between our president, Abraham Lincoln, and Charles Lindbergh, and possibly a previous life as a yogi. And I want to mention also that you were listening to The Radical Dolphin, and that music is being created by Bob Murray, and he is writing music that's inspired from John Lennon and George Harrison from The Other Side, which we feature each and every week on The Peaceful Planet. And the music intention is to bring greater peace to the planet, hence the title of our show, which was given to me by John. And then I wrote the lyrics to the Radical Dolphin, but I really can't take full credit because these are channeled lyrics from the spirit of John Lennon, who has been writing through me, and I have a new book that is still in the works, and I hope to publish all of his lyrics and eventually find a musical talent out there somewhere who would like to perhaps interpret the lyrics and the music, which is synthesized, into a unified form. So anyway, I'm mentioning that, and if you want to reach me, you can send an email at dianaspeaks@hotmail.com. And our show today is just going to be so interesting. Richard Salva is a minister and a 30-year expert on past lives. He has lectured widely on yoga, philosophy, reincarnation, and history in the United States and Europe. His recent book, Soul Journey from Lincoln to Lindbergh, has received 5 stars from Forward Clarion Reviews and the Midwest Book Review. To learn more about an amazing book, please reference Richard's website at www.lincolnreincarnation.com. And I have so many interesting details to also share on past lives and Lincoln. And if you are a believer or not in reincarnation, you should really stay tuned for this exciting interview, because you're going to learn some fascinating details that will really pique your curiosity and make you think about the possibility of the soul's journey. So welcome very much to Peaceful Planet, Richard. It is an honor to have you on our program.
Thank you, Marcia. It's a true joy to be here.
Well, I'm so glad to finally talk with you. I've been corresponding for so long, and I have so many incredible connections to Lincoln myself. Let me just say, as an introduction to this interview, that I live in the Springfield, Illinois area. My husband is a Lincoln historian for the state of Illinois, though he has not read the book and he won't be joining us. You know, I've had all kinds of experience with, shall we say, Lincoln, quote-unquote, encounters in my life, being a spiritual medium as I am. And I basically been around Lincoln and Lincoln history for the last 20 years due to my husband. And it is a fascinating subject. And I have also worked at New Salem, which is the pioneer village that is recreated for Lincoln. And while there, I had some spiritual experiences relating to Lincoln. So I'm going to try to weave that into our interview. But Richard is really the expert on Lincoln and this soul journey. And I want to ask you, Richard, how did you ever come up with the idea that possibly Lincoln was reincarnated?
Well, it was actually a statement that was made by a great master of yoga. His name is Paramahansa Yogananda. He was the author of the spiritual classic, Autobiography of a Yogi, that many people interested in spirituality and New Age subjects, especially today, are familiar with. You had mentioned the Beatles just a few moments ago, and many people have seen Yogananda's photograph or picture because it was on the cover of the Sgt. Pepper album. And the Beatles became very much interested in Yogananda before they became interested in the Maharishi, before George Harrison became interested in the Hare Krishna. It was Yogananda and his autobiography that inspired them. George Harrison was the first to pick up on it, and then he turned the other lads from Liverpool onto it, and they became very much interested in it, and because of their interest that many people nowadays are interested in meditation.
Well, it was almost like the beginning of the New Age movement with the turn-on from George, and George is really to be credited for what he did contribute to the understanding of Eastern spirituality in a very Western, materialistic, desensitized world that we were in during the 60s. And, you know, the music that George is writing through me with the lyrics and everything is still very Eastern sounding with a lot of sitar, but it doesn't have the repetition that he had, and it's got all about ascension. So he synthesized a lot of new material from the other side as well. But, you know, that is a very good insight about Yogananda. And he made the statement, did he not, that Abraham Lincoln had lived before as a yogi.
Yes, yes. It was his statement that started the book. But just to mention, not only the Beatles, but also Elvis Presley and many millions of people throughout the world have been inspired by Yogananda. But about 60 years ago or so, Yogananda made the statement that Abraham Lincoln in a past life had been an advanced Himalayan yogi, and that he was reborn as Charles Lindbergh. And I found this an interesting statement, and about 10 years ago, I was on a plane flight going to the East Coast, and I was in between writing projects, and as a minister and a yogi and a spiritual person, I thought I would just ask for guidance. So I prayed and meditated on that plane flight, and within less than a minute's time of making this prayer and this request, I received the guidance to do this book, and I just want to mention this to our listeners. Anytime that you need inspiration, anytime that you need ideas or solutions to problems, if you really open yourself up, that you will receive that sort of guidance. And that's what I received on that airplane flight. The thought came to me, you know, you've read this statement of Yogananda's. Why don't you investigate it? At that time, I had been teaching as well as practicing on a daily basis and studying the deeper teachings of yoga as taught by Yogananda. These are the teachings that Himalayan yogis practice, and had been doing that for over 20 years. And so I was already familiar with that part of it. But then I also realized that here were two men, Abraham Lincoln and Charles Lindbergh, whose histories have been so deeply chronicled, whose lives have been so deeply scrutinized by biographers and historians. After Abraham Lincoln's death, so many people wrote about him because everyone wanted to know about this great man who pretty much helped to save the country and hold it together and who had freed the slaves. And after Charles Lindbergh made his famous flight over the Atlantic, everyone wanted to know about him as well. So people started to write about both men, and they told a lot of details about their lives, details about their habits, about their ways of dealing with people, about their ways of speaking, and so on. And when you go through the histories, as I did, I was just amazed by what I found. You know, when I started, I wasn't sure how much I would find. I thought I would find a few interesting connections. But I ended up uncovering nearly 500 fascinating similarities and parallels between the lives of Lincoln and Lindbergh, and more than 200 between the life of Abraham Lincoln and the ancient spiritual science of yoga, and more than 100 between Charles Lindbergh and the path of yoga. And I put it all into my book. But these connections, they're not the sort of connection that you expect to find with everyone, you know. You know, that they both really like pizza or they like Beatles music or something like that nowadays would be so common. But mental obsessions and ways of dealing, connecting with people and physical habits and even...
Well, you know, I think it's interesting, mm-hmm. too. I always felt that with Lincoln's looks... that there was something unusual and Eastern-looking about him.
Yeah.
And as an artist, I have sketched Lincoln, although my primary focus is, of course, Princess Di and Mother Teresa, because I work with those two masters as, you know, in the peace message I do. But I have drawn him before, and then when a few years back, my husband pointed out an article about Lincoln's heritage, and that it was thought that his mother, I guess that would that be Anne Lincoln? I'm not remembering her first name.
Yes, yes, it slips my mind at the moment, too.
Yeah,
I remember it
his mother was said to have been what they call a Melungeon, which I don't know if you've heard the term before, but a Melungeon is a person of mixed ancestry from the Middle East, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
And so Lincoln has very unusual physical features that strongly resemble that of a yogi. And I also thought it was interesting the way you did the comparison between the physical features of Lincoln and Lindbergh, and I had never really contemplated that before. If you could elaborate a little bit on the physical features, that they are strikingly similar.
Yes, yes. They have certain similarities to them that are really quite fascinating. The fact that both men were just about the same height. They were both tall and thin, And at the same time, they both, in spite of the fact that they were tall and thin, they both had really quite amazing physical strength.
Mm-hmm.
And they both had large hands and feet, which for the feet especially were almost clownish at the end of their long legs. Both men had this tendency to hunch their backs a little bit, which you can see in the photographs. Both men had, I was interested to know this, because with Abraham Lincoln, you know, for most of us, our image of Lincoln is the $5 bill, you know, or the Lincoln head penny. We don't really know what color his eyes were, but when I researched, I found that his eye color was light blue, and it was the
now
same.
Now that is fascinating,
yeah,
because I always
for Charles Lindbergh.
Wow.
If you look at photographs, too, you can look into their eyes. You see the same soul looking out through both of their eyes. Yogananda used to go with the, along with that statement that the eyes are the windows of the soul, that there's a particular look in a person's eyes that can't be duplicated. It's as individual as a thumbprint. And when you look in the eyes of Abraham Lincoln, you look in the eyes of Charles Lindbergh, you see that same really deep look of a deep soul who's as if studying you, almost as if from a distance, almost as if he's up there in the Himalayas in a cave, just sort of looking at you out of through a telescope or something. He's,
well, if you take the face of Lincoln and you wrap a turban around it, there you go.
Yes, yes. Or you put a longer beard.
He's got that really Eastern look, and the eyes are so deep set. But
yes,
so
you put some Rajakshamala around his on his chest, and he looks just like a Swami.
Yeah, exactly. He does. Now, you know, the wisdom that poured forth and the sense of justice and righteousness and deep spirituality, even though he was basically just an agnostic. Another connection I have to Lincoln was that I had belonged to the Presbyterian Church, which had been, you know, part of their... He was not a part of that church, but Mary was. But then the other connection that's interesting is that because they had lost so many children, Mary used to attend seances. And, of course, I've attended the Spiritualist Church as well. So there's a lot of incredible connections that I feel personally to Abe Lincoln. And I know my husband does because he's worked with them. But I've told my husband for years that I've actually seen Abraham Lincoln hovering around him. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't usually see visions of spirit, but one time when my husband was very ill, I saw... In the darkness, kind of a mirage image, if you will, of Abe Lincoln, and I believe that he was sending him healing or something. And another interesting point that I want to tie in with this is that I've attended the Spiritualist Church here in Illinois, and during my times there, they have a materialized painting of Abe Lincoln, and they have a record in their history of a funeral that was for the founder of that church, and then someone channeled Abe Lincoln, and he gave a very long-winded speech, and this was like some 20-some years after. So he does come through from time to time, and I believe that, you know, I totally believe the idea of the continuity of spirit and the idea of the reincarnation, but I think what you put out in your book, Rich, is the idea that there are so many personality traits that carry on, and there are so many continuing themes of legacy, shall we say. Both were great men in American history. Both accomplished a great deal. And they both had a name that sounded similar, Lindbergh Lincoln. You know?
Yes, yes.
I mean, it's just incredible when you really stop to think of it.
Yes, I think sometimes in a particular lifetime we hear a name over and over again, and we start to identify with that name to such a degree that we will attract a similar name in our next lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
In Lincoln's day, people went by their last name. People who would go up to him didn't call him Abe or Abraham or anything like that. They didn't call him Abe because he hated nicknames, which Lindbergh also hated. But they said, "Hey, Lincoln, you know, this and that," and he would respond in a similar way. And so he heard that name over and over again, and sometimes, especially with a very powerful lifetime, such as Lincoln's, if you hear a name over and over, you might start to identify it. And it wouldn't be surprising if in your next lifetime, especially in the next one or ones that come soon afterward, that you would attract a lifetime in a body, in a family, where you would have a name that would be similar. You know, for also for Lindbergh, I've often wondered, you know, just playing with the idea, similarity with Lincoln, but it's almost like Lindbergh is a combination and abbreviation of two names that had a great deal to do with his previous lifetime. You have Lincoln, and then you also have Gettysburg, where he gave his famous speech. And when you combine them together and abbreviate them, abridge them, that becomes Lindbergh.
The Gettysburg Address. And then the famous speech that he gave of the House Divided.
Yes.
And my husband can quote those, you know, pretty much verbatim. We both have been involved for 20 years in living history interpretation. And basically it's his profession, not mine, but I did it for a summer at New Salem.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was at New Salem, I had some extraordinary experiences relating to, you know, spirituality. I was put in charge of a medicinal garden. I played the role of Doc Rainier's wife. And these characters are all documented historically. And I felt a great affinity, of course, to doing that. And I took naturally to all the herbs and stuff. And it was just, it fit like a second shoe. And before I ever did any channeling, I always heard from my higher self. And while I was at New Salem, my higher self came in one time and said, "You have been here before. You lived here." And I thought, wow. And then I just let it go, because at that time I wasn't working actively with Ascended Masters or anything, and I didn't know what to do with the insult.
Yes, yes. But, you know, since that New Salem only existed for a short time period.
Right.
And since it was pretty much the whole time it was there practically, I mean, soon after it was built, Lincoln came, soon after he left, it disappeared. It was one of those frontier towns that just sort of come and go just very quickly on the...
It was almost as if that was there for him to have the experience with the rail splitting and the cabin building and the store, which failed. He had so much failure at New Salem, you know?
Yes, and he also had an experience of being the postmaster there, which was one of his first jobs that he had. And
absolutely.
It's interesting that for Charles Lindbergh, one of his first jobs was to deliver air mail, so he was also in the job in the Postal Service, and he flew pretty much almost right over New Salem, flew into Springfield. In fact, the route he flew on a daily basis for quite a long time was over the heart of Illinois, which was the land that Lincoln loved and really missed. On the last day of his life, he spoke longingly of returning to Illinois at the end of his term of office, his second term of office as president. And so you see how these desires that we have when we die, they don't disappear. Just as any commitment of energy in the heart, any emotion, any strong feeling, it won't disappear when you die, or it won't disappear if you try to push it under. Eventually, sometime it has to come up. And the law for desire is that eventually, sometime in one of your lifetimes, for any desire you have, eventually it has to be fulfilled, or it has to be transcended. And in my book, I show many, many examples of desires on Abraham Lincoln's part that found fulfillment in Charles Lindbergh.
Yeah. Well, I thought that was very insightful, because after all, it was so unfortunate to have lost Abraham Lincoln to assassination.
Yes.
And it was, his life was cut short, and he had planned to continue with various things and retire, and he had no opportunity to do that. But then in the life of Lindbergh, he did. Now, let's get into the family life of both men.
Yes.
Now, you make a striking comparison to their wives, and maybe Ann Rutledge and Ann Morrow, but clarify that, if you would, what you feel the connections were.
Yes, it's rather fascinating, because their connections in Charles Lindbergh's relationship with his wife, Ann Morrow, that are strikingly similar to connections that Abraham Lincoln had, both with his wife, Mary Todd, and with a woman that, according to legend anyway, he was linked with in New Salem, Ann Rutledge. In fact, this is something that a friend mentioned to me. I was just starting to delve into relationship connections between the two men, and he mentioned that, you know, he had done a little bit of study on this, and he said, you know, it seems to me that Ann Morrow doesn't seem to be a match for Mary Todd as far as personalities go. She seems to be more of a match with Ann Rutledge, and when I looked at it, I saw that it was true. Mary Todd Lincoln had a personality. She was very outwardly emotional, and she would tell her secrets to just anybody. And Anne Morrow was much more secretive as far as her feelings went. She would express them, but she wouldn't tell just anybody about them. She would tell very few people, even her children, about some of them. And so you see that the personalities didn't really match. And this is one of the ways to tell if somebody had been somebody in a past life. How close are their personalities? They should have pretty much of a similarity of personality. There may be individual differences here or there because we haven't only lived just one lifetime in the past, but other lifetimes in which we've experimented with different personality traits and tried them on, you know, like a shirt or a jacket to see if they fit. And so there's a wider area of things that we can pull on that way, of traits that we can pull on, then may show up in just one lifetime. But there should be somewhat of a personality match, and there isn't between Mary Todd and Anne Morrow, but there are all these other fascinating connections between the two. Just to give you one example, Mary Todd had problems with her emotions, and this might have been exacerbated by a medicine that she took called laudanum that had opium in it. And if you've already got problems with your emotions, she also had really bad headaches, so she would take this for that. You can imagine how taking opium would just make it worse. And so
I remember reading about her migraines.
Yes. And there was one instance that I mentioned in my book, an image that is somewhat comic to contemplate, of Abraham Lincoln running through the backyards of Springfield while his wife is chasing him with a meat cleaver in her hands.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah. And so, you know, he went through a lot. I mean, that was an extreme example, but he went through all sorts of experiences with her. And even though they loved each other, you know, if you live a lifetime with someone like that, and you're thinking what you might do in the future, what you should have done this lifetime, like, and maybe I should have checked this out ahead of time. Anyway, when Charles Lindbergh was looking at who he might be with in this lifetime, was thinking of getting married, he said one of the first thoughts that came into his mind, a very strong thought, was that he should check to make sure that there was no history of mental illness in the family.
Here you go.
Yes. You know, and you can imagine that if Abraham Lincoln was reborn, that's one of the first thoughts he'd have when he thought of relationships. You know, and he even thought that, Lindbergh even thought that he should go through medical records and check all of their family to make sure that, you know, he didn't do all that, but that he wrote about it in his final autobiography, his Autobiography of Values.
So, now, because Anne Rutledge didn't live very long, and there was some speculation about whether she might have also been engaged to someone else, but then broke that off and agreed to marry Lincoln, and of course she died so tragically so young. What connection do you make other than the name?
Yes, the two Annes. Well, both women were known for their manual dexterity. Anne Rutledge was supposed to be really quite adept at making quilts and so on. Anne Morrow had this habit that her daughter wrote about while in an airport. She had a ticket in one hand, and her mind was a million miles away. And she was folding this thing one-handed, you know, into these intricate shapes of triangles and squares and so on. And her daughter noticed this piece of unconscious origami that she had made, and she brought it to her attention. She just was embarrassed by it, threw it in a waste paper basket. But there's a physical habit. Another thing about Anne Rutledge is that when people described her, when Abraham Lincoln's partner, William Herndon, was collecting stories about Anne Rutledge, several times people described her as an angel, that she was just like an angel in her personality. And Anne Morrow was like that. She was angelic. And in fact, she had a sort of an obsession with angels. Her daughter, Reeve Lindbergh, wrote that Anne used to collect Christmas cards that had angels on it, and she would just stare at them. And Reeve said that there was almost this yearning look in her face, and she wondered if her mother was imagining herself with those sort of wings, and she would say, but how could they possibly manage with those heavy wings on their shoulders, you know? And so there was this connection with angels between the two of them. and also the lifestyle that Ann Rutledge lived, you know, in New Salem, before she died so early on in her life. She was this lifestyle, the pioneer woman out there in nature, and just a simple sort of life. You know, that lifestyle was perfectly described in Anne Morrow's famous book, her most famous book, Gift from the Sea. She just wrote about, almost yearningly and wistfully, about how wonderful it was in past centuries when women would be at home and they would make candles out of wax or tallow, and they would just, you know, cook, you know, and just the sewing, and that there was a rhythm to that lifestyle that was so meditative and that she appreciated.
It's interesting, you know, because as I was working at New Salem, I've even cooked at the Rutledge Tavern.
Yes. In fact, I wonder if you were there when I visited there. I had a visit there and had a wonderful meditation there, feeling Abraham Lincoln's presence there.
I don't know. I think it was, I want to say it was 93 or 94 when I worked there for a summer.
Yes, that was before I came. But yes,
okay.
It was a very powerful place. If you... for all the listeners, if you are spiritually sensitive and you feel inspiration, I recommend going to the places in Springfield and going to New Salem and meditating there. I found, you know, Yogananda spoke of Lincoln as his past life Himalayan yogi. He was talking about an advanced soul who came onto the earth with a life mission to do
Definitely.
What he had done in his lifetime. And if you are sensitive to those things, I really felt it, especially in the Lincoln Herndon Law Office and in
New thank State. You for saying that. That's where my husband works every day.
Oh, really?
Herndon Law Office.
Wow,
yeah.
I envy him. When I went there,
You know, Richard, you must come out sometime and see all this, and we'll give you the premier tour.
Oh, absolutely. That would be wonderful.
Yeah, I'd love to have you come and visit Springfield. Now, yeah, tell me more about what you experienced when you were at the law office, and also I'll give you my husband's description, and we'll figure out whether you saw him.
Yes, it's quite
interesting,
possible.
Interesting, these connections.
This was about 8 years ago or so. You know, it's interesting because I took a red-eye flight from here where I live on the West Coast. I live in Silicon Valley, to the Midwest. I had been reading all these connections and that seemed to bolster what Yogananda had said about Lincoln Lindbergh, but I felt like I wanted to actually experience it, and after years of meditation, I could go to places and just feel that there's a different inspiration, say, in Lourdes than there would be in Assisi or different places that have a powerful inspiration to
Absolutely
them.
Absolutely true. Yes.
Yes. And so when I went to there, I thought I would go there and meditate, and so I did that. I went to Springfield, and again, I took a red-eye flight, so I was like half asleep when I got there. Because of the way things worked out, I went to some of these places soon after I got off the airplane. And, you know, there was the light that I felt in the Springfield Herndon Law offices was so powerful that it woke me up. I mean, it was that powerful, and, you know, it made sense because, you know, in his home I felt inspiration too, but Mary Todd lived there more, and Lincoln was out a lot with his friends. He rode the circuit court, which meant he was away from home, from long stretches.
You know, that's
time.
A very good insight,
yes.
And I share that with you because I've been there so much at the Lincoln Herndon Law Office, but upstairs on the second or third floor is an office that belonged entirely to Lincoln, and he was known for falling asleep there, and he was also known to let the boys come over and roughhouse with him, and I think he probably did a lot of his thinking there and a lot of his writing.
Yes,
you know?
And that was the place, you know, he basically left that law office to go to Washington eventually to become president, and so that was the place where the germ of ideas came through. His initial inspiration in politics came in New Salem, and according to the legend, Ann Rutledge encouraged that in him, and but eventually it came to full force through that law office. He became interested in politics, he started to form his ideas, and the inspiration started to flow through him. And when you have a lifetime where you are dedicated to a life mission that's divinely guided, then when you start to tune into it, you are actually drawing light into that place, drawing spiritual, divine light into that place.
You know, you are really evolved as a spiritual person, and I like the way you're adding all of this in because, you know, you're right about going to sacred places and exploring the feeling that is given, but you can actually touch the spirit of the person that made that place what it is.
Yes, because
simply by being open.
Yes, because each of us can do that. Each of us can act as a channel for that light, but that channel will be colored to a certain degree by our own personalities and who and what we are, because we're all children of God and we all have that connection, but each connection is unique and each connection is individual. And, you know, that's what one reason I went on that trip. I wanted to feel Lincoln's vibration, his energy, and I did when I went to there. And then the next day I flew to Minnesota and drove up to Little Falls where Charles Lindbergh's boyhood home was. And as soon as I walked onto the land, my knees almost buckled because, you know what, it was the same energy I'd been feeling the day before. You know, I'd been to places that had different saints, even Assisi. It would be a different energy where St. Francis had been and a different energy where St. Clair had been. And but here I was in two places and two different people separated by time, but the vibration was exactly the same. The only difference was that in Little Falls and Charles Lindbergh, there was a sadness that I felt in Abraham Lincoln's places, that melancholy he was well known for. Who knows what karma he came in to have that. You could see that in a lot of his photographs. They said almost dripped off of him, this melancholy.
Yes, it did.
But in Charles Lindbergh, I felt the light that was there, but the melancholy was gone. And it was like all the things that Lincoln had done in his life, all the ways that he had helped people, the way that he had acted as a channel, he had so selflessly offered that lifetime up to be of service to people, had freed him from whatever karma had cursed him with melancholy during his life.
I'm sure you've also heard of the accounts. I've been over to the Lincoln home many times, too, and there you see the bedroom set and everything and the dresser. And apparently he had a premonition while looking into the mirror. I don't know if it was there or if that was must have been in the White House, actually.
I think
he looked into the mirror and saw himself in his own funeral.
Yes. Yes, actually, there were a number of premonitions he had in his life. He actually saw his whole lifetime, even as a young boy, spread out before him of rising to a place of power and then falling to a bloody ending. His colleague and friend, Ward Hill Lamon, wrote about these things. I think the one that you're talking about, and these connections, by the way, they connect very well with the idea that he was a past life yogi, because one of the abilities, the spiritual abilities that come to a yogi, if he perfects the quality of introspection, according to Patanjali, who first wrote about yoga, he develops a spiritual ability to receive insights, information from the higher spheres. And, you know, for us in the West, we're not prone to visions. You know, people who are sent into mental hospitals. But for many of them nowadays, they're more open, perhaps. But especially in those days. And so oftentimes for us, because our conscious minds are closed to such things, that information will come in dreams. And for Abraham Lincoln, this was what he experienced. He had these dreams. Sometimes they were waking dreams. He had visions, like I said, of his life, all through his life, of what would happen. And that one that you mentioned where he was lying on a bed, he saw his face, he saw himself reflected in the mirror opposite. And I think it actually might have been in Springfield, because there's the bed and there's the mirror. But
I'm thinking that it maybe was, because I remember hearing the story maybe when I was in Springfield.
Yes, I think I might have heard it there too, repeated to me. But he saw his face, his visage was divided in half, and one half was very alive and the other looked almost ghostly and almost like it was a faint afterimage of the other side. And he stared at it for a while and moved his head and it still looked the same. And afterward, he thought, and I think his wife also thought, who's also very intuitive and very spiritual, that it represented that he would live through his first term of office but not live through his second. But he also had another dream that I think you were also referring to. This happened just soon before he was assassinated. He dreamt that he was walking through the White House, and he heard people weeping and speaking, but he couldn't see anybody. And then he found himself in the very large East Room, which is where they have banquets and so on like that in the White House. And he saw then and there many people gathered around a coffin, somebody laid out for their funeral. And he turned to somebody next to him and he said, "Who lies dead in the White House?" And the man said, "The president. He was killed by an assassin." And then this loud sound of weeping broke out, and it woke him up. The weeping woke him up. And after that, he started to study the Old Testament for accounts of people who had had dreams, people who had had these sort of intuitions, and he wondered, you know, if he was receiving that same sort of information.
You know, as you tell me that story, I get goosebumps.
Yes. It's very powerful.
When I was at New Salem, we used to have a group of scholars that would gather in the mornings before we'd go out and do our third-person living history, and we would impersonate a character. So now my work with channeling is kind of related to that, too. You know, it's incredible.
Yes, they're very, very linked.
Yes, they are. And they would elaborate on things, but the one thing that came out of these meetings was just the absolute clarity of Abraham Lincoln's thinking and the profundity of which he was able to write.
Most people
had this basic education, you know. I mean, there has to have been a past life where he honed in on his spiritual skills to write great works like the Emancipation Proclamation, like the House Divided speech. I mean, those are so eloquent. You can hear them over and over again, and you just still get something from them.
Yes, he was channeling a power. Yet to be able to do that, as you say, you have to be able to focus your mind and be able to listen intently within. When he used to write, Abraham Lincoln, there's a record of this, of a man who worked in the telegraph office that was right near the White House in the War Department. And he said Lincoln would work on some of his speeches there. And he would just sit for long periods of time and just write a little bit, and then he'd look at it and he'd just sort of meditate on what he'd written. It's like he was listening within to what was trying to come through, as if to ask, what is trying to happen here? You know, many people during his day wanted to end slavery, the abolitionists and so on, and they tried to go about it in different ways, but nothing seemed to really work. You know, and they said about Lincoln, in fact, Frederick Douglass said this about him after he had passed away, that to abolitionists, perhaps, he went slowly, but in his own way, he went very quickly because what he did actually worked. You know, and he was able to tune into a way that he could end slavery in such a way that people would be able to accept it. And Lincoln, in fact, was really happy to be able to report afterward. He said the way it worked out with the war and everything, that the way that he ended slavery, he said nobody could really fault him for the way that he went about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, we have the documents on exhibit here in Springfield. They may be copies, but they are housed here in the archives. And then there's also the new, I don't know if you've seen the new presidential museum dedicated to Lincoln, but
I saw it before they did all the recent changes to it, which I would also love to see. You know, in a couple of years will be his 200th anniversary of his birthday.
Mm-hmm. That's true too. And then there'll be well, you must come out and visit with us and re-experience this again. You know, it's just so interesting, isn't it?
Yes.
And, you know, it just seems like with Abraham Lincoln in particular, you could go on and on forever about the spirituality and various connections. But, you know, the Lindbergh connection is also very interesting because both men accomplished something great. Now, Lindbergh, of course, is credited with the first flight across the Atlantic and the Spirit of St. Louis. And I thought you made an interesting contrast, too, with his connection to the French and possibly King Louis. I wondered if you could elaborate on that.
Yes, just a little bit. While I was working on this book, you know, sometimes I just received these inspirations, and it was like I was really riding a wave of energy. I felt like a surfer working on this project because there was so much inspiration. There were so many connections to read about, and it was just this powerful sense of guidance all the way through. But at one point, I just was focusing, and something turned my mind onto the point of the fact that Charles Lindbergh's airplane is called the Spirit of St. Louis. And I thought, just for the heck of it, I would do a very brief study on the life of St. Louis. And what I found just amazed me, because there were so many connections between St. Louis and Abraham Lincoln. They both had trouble with the people in the southern part of their realm. Neither man ever swore. They were both known to be unusually tall. There was connection after connection. You just look at whatever we know about St. Louis. Now, this was like, 700 or 800 years ago, so we don't really have that much. But whatever we do know corresponded with Abraham Lincoln and to a large degree also with Charles Lindbergh. So here you have...
And they were physically tall. Did St. Louis resemble Lincoln? I don't remember seeing the paintings. I'm sure I could look them up.
I don't know that we actually have that, but just the image of Charles Lindbergh flying in a plane with this motto on the side of it, the spirit of St. Louis, I thought was just priceless.
Now, could you elaborate, too, on some of his mystical experiences while in flight?
Yes. Charles Lindbergh used to go into spontaneous meditations when he would fly, and he wrote about this later on in his life, how much he missed accessing what he called the core of his being. He would be on these long flights where you just sat there for hours and hours. And if he had been a yogi in a past life, and you were used to sitting for hours and hours and going into meditation, in a future lifetime, if you find yourself in that situation, you would just do what Lindbergh did, which was he would just start to spontaneously meditate. But he had these really powerful metaphysical experiences during his famous solo Atlantic flight from New York to Paris in 1927, his historic flight. Many people know about his flight. We're taught that in grade school, but very few people know about these spiritual experiences he had during the flight. Just to set the background, before he started that flight, he had almost zero sleep the night before. And the flight itself lasted for about 33 hours. So this man went for about 60 hours without sleep. The flight started early in the morning, and then he was flying over the Atlantic. He was going about 100 miles an hour in his airplane. And he was about halfway over when nightfall hit again, and comes a time, I've experienced this, I've tried to stay up all night before, there comes a time in the middle of the night where you just feel like it's really hard to hold your eyes open. You feel like you just have to fall asleep. And Lindbergh was experiencing this, especially considering he'd had almost no sleep the night before. And two parts of his mind were waging a battle. His subconscious was whispering to him, saying, "You have to sleep. You can't stay up this late. It's not humanly possible. How are you supposed to do this?" And his conscious mind was arguing back, "No, if I fall asleep, I'll fall into the Atlantic Ocean. Nobody will ever hear from me again. I'll die." And so while this tension was created between the conscious and the subconscious, a third part of his mind, which was the superconscious, came into play. Yogananda used to say that the superconsciousness can be found at higher part of our minds, can be found at the horizon line between the conscious and the subconscious. And this tension between his conscious and subconscious catapulted him into a superconscious state. As Lindbergh himself wrote, he said a third part of his mind came in and started to just say in a very calm voice, "Don't worry about it. You will rest, but you won't fall asleep, and everything will be all right." And he was too tired to argue, and he just surrendered to this third part of his mind. And suddenly, everything in the cockpit of that airplane changed. Suddenly, he was able to see all around the cockpit at once. He wrote about this in his final autobiography.
Wow.
He said his back of his head was like one big eyeball. It's something that comes rarely to yogis in meditation called spherical vision. And he said while he was experiencing that, he saw in the back of his airplane these astral beings came, these spirits came to visit him. And they would come up one at a time, float up to him, and they would talk with him mind to mind and spirit to spirit. And he wrote afterwards that he could never remember exactly what they said, but it was so meaningful to him. And in fact, he wrote in his Pulitzer Prize-winning book, The Spirit of St. Louis, "I wondered if I'd known these souls in past lives because they seemed so familiar, but he couldn't remember them in his current lifetime." So while talking to them, he felt this inspiration. We can wonder, too, with what Yogananda had said, whether these were Himalayan yogi friends of his who had come to visit him at this very important moment in his life to bring inspiration and support to him. But anyway, after a while, they disappeared. And then he had another experience, which was his spirit left his physical body. He astral projected through the cone of the Spirit of St. Louis airplane. And as he wrote in his book, his spirit mixed with the wash of his propeller. So we have this image of Charles Lindbergh flying in his astral body beside the Spirit of St. Louis over the Atlantic in this historic flight. And at that point, Lucky Lindy was flying two planes at once, the Spirit of St. Louis and the astral plane.
Wow, that's phenomenal.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, one other thing. All the time while this is happening, his body was flying on autopilot beyond his conscious control. And the amazing thing was that when he hit landfall in Ireland, he found that he was pretty much exactly on the course. Now, this is the odds against this are astronomical, especially when you consider that during part of his flight, his compass wasn't working.
Oh, my God.
And he was flying through fog through parts of it, so he couldn't even guide by the stars.
Wow. That he was divinely guided in that flight, just as Abraham Lincoln was divinely guided when he wrote the Emancipation Proclamation and did all of his great statesmanship that he did as president.
Yes. And you see, he had the karma for this to work out, too, because as Abraham Lincoln, when Lincoln died, he had done so many wonderful things for America and for the world. And then his life was snuffed out or abbreviated. He deserved all these wonderful things. He had this karma to receive so much praise and adoration and blessings from people. And Lindbergh was just showered with all that after his flight.
Yes, I totally concur with all your perceptions. And I want to stay in touch with you, Richard. Your book is fabulous. Let me recommend it again to our audience. And I apologize that we weren't able to pull callers in for this fascinating interview to ask you questions, but we'll have to have you back another time.
Yes, I'd love to.
Your website again is LincolnReincarnation.com, and the title of the book, if you're going to look for it, is Soul Journey from Lincoln to Lindbergh.
Yes, and there's a special offer on that site if you're interested with the bonus gifts equaling about $130 or more. So you might be interested in that.
What was that?
Oh, there's a special offer on the website. If you buy the book through the website, you receive a bonus gift that are valued at over $130.
Oh, yeah, I saw that too, and it looks interesting. Well, you know, we have to conclude today, but I want to mention my website before we go. And thank you again, Richard, for your enlightening conversation, and I hope we stay in touch regarding possible visits to Springfield and the Lincoln site.
Yes.
And you just have so much spiritual insight, and your scholarship is very good as well. And again, I want to refer our listeners to my website at www.DianaSpeaksToTheWorld and ask you to surf the site and mention my book, With Love from Diana. Also, I'm making a historic journey to France coming up later in the summer, and there'll be an ad that will run about that right about now. And after that, we're going to hear a special song called Long Road to Nepal, as channeled from Bob Murray. And we encourage our listeners to visit www.thestarstillshine.com, where you can hear more great music that's being synthesized from spirit. Thanks again, Richard, and many blessings to you and
thank
to
you,
all
Marcia.
Our listening audience.
Thank you, Marcia.
It was a pleasure. I wonder if Don is with us, or I don't hear the music, but he probably has it on. I don't know.
Yeah.
I heard the little click where the music starts.
Do you want to accelerate your ascension? Sign up for a reading with Archangel Michael through Marcia McMahon, Diana Speaks at hotmail.com, or site index at www.dianaspeakstotheworld.com.
I want to hear some music. God, there's so many great albums. I love my albums. Here's an album. God.
I guess in me you found the perfect rebound. Did it make you feel better?